Blog Talk Radio.
Little black boys are being taught by their school teachers. They don't possess the mental capacity to become doctors, lawyers, and engineers. And our young prodigies are being denied the opportunity to shine and find themselves without a prayer, since that's been removed from the classroom and are caught up in the aftermath of the Bush administration and gangster rap, where only the strong survive by committing urban genocide, by selling drugs in their communities to get that dollar bill, y'all, or to take another human being's life with a gun because someone approached them up on the street and just said, hello, hello.
Good morning and welcome to Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. I'm your host, Joy Keys. I want to thank you for joining us today. You can call in if for some reason you have any problems with your computer to 646-929-0368 to listen to the show and ask questions. Again, we have a special guest today, Bill Holmes. Bill Holmes is a writer, author, poet. Bill Holmes is the artist who has dared to dream in the face of adversity while recognizing the divine nature of life and its infinite possibilities. As a respected poet, writer, and author on the Philadelphia spoken word scene, Bill has touched many souls through his creative endeavors by striving towards excellence in everything he does. His performances have captivated many audiences through his unique style of humor, insight, spirituality, pride, and most importantly, love and appreciation of a woman. By no means is Bill afraid to keep it real when expressing the importance of self-love. Bill is the founder, the publisher, and CEO of Universal Expressions, LLC, a publishing company that allows artists the opportunity to achieve their aesthetic dreams. He is also the author of the chapbook Illuminations, the spoken word EP Asphyxiation, the full-length poetry book Straight From My Heart, and the spoken word CD The Air I Breathe, and the Essence best-selling fiction novel, One Love. Bill, are you there?
I'm here, Joy.
Good morning. Thank you. Thank you for joining us this morning. I want to let everyone that's listening to this show this morning know you are in the presence of greatness with Bill this morning. He is definitely on the rise, up and coming. He is a very versatile writer. He not only writes in English, he has poems in Spanish. He writes about politics, he writes about sexuality, he writes about everyday things that are going on in your neighborhood, crimes against kids from, you know, stray bullets, and he writes from his heart about, I guess, I'm assuming about how you feel about what's going on in your life and the world around you. So, Bill, just tell us a little bit about yourself. What made you start writing?
Well, thank you, Joy, for all the positive and wonderful compliments. And good morning to your listeners. I've always been a creative person, and for most of my life, that has always been a part of me. When I was younger, back in elementary school, it was drawing comic book characters. The biggest impression in my life was Star Wars, seeing that at 7 years old and wanting to just, like, wow, make movies. And just really got sidetracked with my creativity a little bit. And about maybe mid-90s, I was going through some things, working at a job that I didn't care for. I was also engaged to get married and in an unfruitful relationship. And I just really started taking pen to paper and just starting really writing down my frustrations. And I shared it, my poetry that I wrote. Well, actually, I had one of my poems that was published in the Philadelphia Tribune called Peace of Mind.
And, okay.
Wow, that was back in 96. And it seems like a lifetime ago. And
yeah.
It does. And I was at an office party with my sister, best friend, Tanya. And, you know, I shared my poetry with her, and she made us, we were at Warm Daddy's when it was still at Front Street right off mm-hmm. In Philadelphia. And they were doing the open mic nights on Mondays, third Monday of the month. And she made a suggestion, Bill, you should start reading your poetry live. And I'm like, no, Tanya, nobody's not going to, you know, be interested in what I have to say. And she was completely right. And I started reading, going to venues around Philly, and just really started working on my writing and just, wow. And just really the rest is
history.
Yeah. And it's just like I'm living and fulfilling my lifetime dream.
Now, did you always, were you involved in any other art forms other than writing, painting or dance or music?
The only thing that I was really was involved with was art in terms of, like, drawing. And a lot of people don't know this, that I was really, one of my aspirations when I was in high school was to be a comic book artist and
okay.
a graphic designer. But I kind of had a little disagreement in ninth grade with my art teacher, and that kind of, like, threw me off the whole creative path. But I would always sketch in, like, the privacy for my own comfort. And that's a part of me that I actually thought that I was going to actually do that. But, like I said, that's a part of me that I want to share and keep to myself because, you know, I have the poetry and is, like, nice and everything. But that's just a part of Bill that, you know, that's for me. When I need to relax, I can just pull out a sketchbook and just draw a person or an object.
Now, what did your parents think about you following this path? Because I think you have a day job, as we call it, as artists call it, a day job. And what's your day job, Bill?
I do have a day job. I work for a consulting firm in Philadelphia.
Okay. And, I know you did some stuff with accounting.
Yes, I also did accounting, also in the healthcare industry. And
what did your parents think when you said, I'm going to be this poet, I'm going to go out on a limb and produce a CD and write a book?
You know what? It's funny you should mention that because my parents were always supportive of me and my creative when I being creative when I was younger, and they would just never think anything of it in terms of, like, I would just write. And I don't think that they could ever imagine me doing that until and even I didn't imagine that I was going to be, like, writing until, like, I did a feature back in 98, and my mom was there, my stepfather, my father, my stepmother, and my relatives. I invited my ex-fiance and a couple of my coworkers, and they were completely blown away. They were like, I don't know who that is up on stage, but that is not Bill. And so I don't think that it was like a surprise. I can't say if it was a surprise to them or not, but if I did wind up into it, it wouldn't have surprised. It wouldn't have been a complete surprise, let me put it that
right.
way.
Right. So who are some of your inspirations? What other writers do you like and take inspiration from?
One of the persons that when I first started doing poetry that really truly inspired me was Kevin Powell, who was on the first season of The Real World back in New York. And he was the poet, he was the angry black male, but that's the way they portrayed him on MTV. And but basically, I went to one of his book signings where he had a book of essays called Keeping It Real. And just like, and also I bought his poetry book, Recognize. And I saw myself in Kevin, I really did, in terms of what he was doing and, you know, having people come out there and just really, and he was a major influence, as well as another author who got me into fiction, writing fiction, and he's no longer doing it, Marcus Major, who was an author of Good People's, Four Guys in Trouble, A Man Most Worthy, Family Affair, and Marcus had a book signing at Robin's Bookstore in Philadelphia, and I was the only person that attended. And,
wow.
You know, yeah, and that kind of tells you a lot about, you know,
the support for, I guess, black.
Support, exactly.
Do you think it's more support for women poets than there are for men poets?
Well, Marcus is an author, but I guess because of, like, I don't really understand, I really didn't understand why, you know, you've got an author that's like a bestseller and, you know, only one person shows up. I don't know if it was the fault of the store or whatever, but for me, the experience, we had a chance to bond, and I was telling him a little story about someone that I was dating, and the woman, I went out on one date with her, she saw me perform poetry, and I never heard anything from her, but I wrote her a poem. And I wrote
You scared her, Bill?
Yes, exactly. And I wrote a poem for her, and I gave it to her, and he said, you know, you scared this woman off. And it's just like, you know, and then he said to me that, you know, I don't usually do this, but he gave me his contact information, and he said, when you get your manuscript together for fiction, call me, and I'll give it to my agent.
Awesome.
I was like, exactly. And
so it probably was meant to be, because nobody showed up, so that gave you the space and time to talk with this man and make
exactly.
that connection. So sometimes things happen in life, and I always tell people, take a risk. And go out maybe to places that you don't normally go or talk to people you don't normally talk to. They're very open and they're willing to share a lot of their knowledge with you. It'd be surprising. Sometimes, you know, people think, oh, they're snobby or they're stars or they're not going to have time for me. But in my experience, these people that we hold on these pedestals are just as human as we are, and somebody helped them get up in the world. So why not they help someone else, you know, in your case,
exactly.
the guy, you know. So is that how you got your book, One Love, started?
No, actually, I didn't take advantage of Marcus's offer,
mm-hmm.
but I kept in touch with him, and he wrote a blurb for me for Straight From My Heart when I first had it self-published.
Okay.
And how I got started with One Love, I was in writing groups. I took fiction writing classes because I went from poetry to writing fiction, and all the things that I forgot or chose to ignore in grammar school came back to haunt me. But it took me a while to get the manuscript together. And originally it was going to be self-published. And I sent it to one publishing company in Philly. They loved it and they wanted to publish it. However, they came back to me with like terms, contractual terms that were not beneficial to my advantage. And from a financial position, it would have been like, you know, for me to do so, it would have been like, I should self-publish this my own.
Right. That happens to a lot of artists. They want so bad to get their work out there, but then they get hooked up with sharks, if you'll say, who want to take advantage of them, and then they don't get any money or not enough money
exactly.
for their work that they did.
Exactly. And I shared this, what happened with other people, and they were like, well, if you want to do it, do it. If not, then, you know, I wouldn't. And I shared it with who was a friend of mine at the time, and we had just recently met, Jessica Tillis, who at the time was a self-published author. And I told her what had happened, and so she was like, you know, I would, you know, it sounds like to me it's a vanity press where they're only going to print a certain amount of copies if you pay for them. And it's
okay.
like, that's not, you know. But, you know, at the conclusion of the phone call, Jessica asked me, send me an excerpt from your manuscript. I sent her the first 7 chapters, and she just fell in love with my writing style, and so she was like, making comparisons to Eric Jerome Dickey, and I was honored by that because
wow.
Eric was like a influence, like to me, an inspiration of what he's accomplished. And basically, she was like, "Well, send me a copy of your manuscript." And this was like a weekend where she was having a birthday party down in Maryland, and I met Jessica for the first time and gave her the copy of the manuscript, and I also gave her a copy of my spoken word CD, "The Air I Breathe," and the rest
okay.
is history.
Well, definitely, I've read the book, and you are a very versatile writer. I mean, you have the fictional writing going on, and in between every, you know, maybe chapter or so, there's a poem thrown in there. So
you don't get bored.
You don't get bored as the reader. It's not just a straight, you know, this flat fictional book. There's, like, hills and valleys. And also, I thought it was very easy read because it's just talking about everyday stuff, relationship issues, family issues, the relationship between the main character and his father who... He felt abandoned his family, and the relationship between single people and married couples, cheating, you know, and also just the basic human feelings that people have that are difficult to express when they're going through stress in their life with someone they really do care about. The two main characters were drawn to each other, but because of things that were going on in their life, there were obstacles and conflicts stopping them. They finally got it together by the end, but... In between, you lay out the story very clearly, what's going on between them. They're both very talented. And, you know, it's funny. You have a comedic side to you. It comes out in your book when you're explaining the main character, the guy, Chris, his first love interest that he had at work and all the drama that she was putting him through. And I know a lot of guys could probably relate to, like, why did I get involved with the woman at my job, you know? And that was hilarious. And I want to, if you don't mind, I would like to play one of your other poems, just a brief poem, Big, Bold, and Beautiful, which also shows your comedic side. Would you mind if I did that, Bill?
Sure, Joy, go ahead.
Okay, hold on. I'm going to play that for the listeners here.
I don't want no high maintenance, anorexic beauty queen with fake nails, silicone implants, a tacky ass blonde hair weave, and a face carved up like a Thanksgiving turkey by the hands of a plastic surgeon, acting like she's a big bomber with the illest nana, starving herself to death in her attempt to measure up to European standards of beauty? Oh, hell no.
Well, I heard that, and I just started laughing because I have a friend of mine who talks about women who have FX, you know, the fake hair, the fake nails, you know, the bleached skin and everything. So I just wanted to play that because you are a serious poet, you are a serious writer, but you have a funny side to you, and you can laugh, I guess, at things that you see around the world. One poem that I read, which was called Patience, which was about a little girl getting killed by violence in the neighborhoods, that really touched me because I hate to see young kids killed in the prime of their life. They haven't even had an opportunity to experience what's going on or fulfill their dreams. And I think when we make it past a certain age, we should definitely knock on wood. And you're a young black male who's made it past the age of 20. You're not in jail. You're doing well. What do you think some of the things that saved you from getting sucked into, I guess, the negativity in the world?
Wow. I would definitely have to credit that to my family, the influence, and really having, like, parents who were, like, very responsible in terms of, like, be home before it gets dark. And we literally had to be home before it was dark. And really just, like, instilling into me at a very early age the importance of education, and also with my father, the relationship that he had with my brother and myself, and the three women who were like major influences in my life, my mother, Sandra Baytops, my favorite aunt, her sister, Rosalind Johnson, and God rest her soul, my grandmother, Maisie Jones, who passed away at when I was 10 years old, but there's never been a day since in the past almost 30 years that, you know, she's left me and that I've not thought of her.
Mm.
And just really, you know, and even like on her birthdays and Mother's Day and certain holidays, I will go out to her gravesite and we'll talk.
Mm-hmm.
So, and just really surrounding myself with a lot of positive people as well in my circle in terms of, like, individuals who mentored me and just really just seeing that, you know, there's a negative side and then there's a bad side of life. And also, being shy at a young age, that really was for me just, like, you know, because I wasn't out there trying to be like everybody else.
Now, how can you say you're shy? You are a spoken word artist. You get in front of crowds now and speak your poetry. Some things very intimate, some very sexual poems you have also, not just fictional straight love stories, but some intimate poems. How do you, are you still consider yourself shy? Or how do you get over performing
back then,
in the public?
Back then, okay. I considered myself shy, like
okay.
growing up and
okay.
just like really retreating into my artistic world. I'm not the person that I was 15, 20 years ago. And what was I going to say? You just interrupted my thought. And just like, no, I'm not. But like getting up front of audiences, like But I will tell this to everybody, I'm always nervous before I go on to performing.
Mm.
Even when you think that it's like, wow, he's phenomenal, he was like that, I was scared to death prior to, you know, me actually performing the poetry.
So you mentioned taking some fictional writing classes and remembering that you had forgotten your grammar. What are some things that people who are interested in writing poetry or writing a book, where should they start? You mentioned journaling. Is that that's a good thing? Now, are there places they could take classes to learn more about how to write poetry or write a fiction novel?
I would say really taking a lot of classes, but also doing your research as well. Journaling is like, that's how I got started. And actually looking at some of the entries that I write in my journals, they manifested themselves into poetry. In terms of like reading other authors that you admire. And like I said, mentioned Kevin Powell as one.
Mm-hmm.
Marcus Major, just studying their writing styles to really, that just like I read a lot of authors who I said, okay, I want to be like this type of person, this type of author, not this type. Because you have some authors nowadays that people say, I'm going to write a book, and you read it, and they don't know how to put together a sentence, or they don't know how to put together like a theme, plot, or to establish a setting as to bring you into the story. And one person who, oh, my gosh, she's been a godsend, and she wrote a blurb for me for One Love, was Tracy Price Thompson, author of Black Coffee, Chocolate Sangria. And just like one of the techniques that she does at the end of each of her chapters, and I borrowed this from her, and I even told her that she always ends the chapter making you want to continue to read the novel. Keep reading, and it's like you'd be up at 2 o'clock in the morning and be like, I got to find out what's happened. It's going to be a long day at work tomorrow, but I got to read it.
Right.
And just like, and there was one, I sent her one of the chapters where how she used like a flashback technique where two characters are talking, one is telling the story to the other character and bringing it back from the present to the past, back to the present again.
Mm. Now you're a teacher yourself. You are teaching writing. Yes?
Yes, I am. I teach a creative writing class at Temple University through their PASSEP organization, and PASSEP stands for Pan-African Studies Continuing Education Program, and it's a nonprofit organization that's been going on for almost 35 years in Philadelphia, and my creative writing class is called Right Here, Right Now, and that's W-R-I-T-E. And
Is there a phone number or a website
people
should go to?
Yes. The website for PASSEP is www.temple.edu/PASSEP, PASSEP. And you can just, they offer it two times a year, in the fall and the spring. And my class will be starting up in February. And you can find out more information about registration, and also the phone number for a PASSEP is area code 215-204-1993.
Okay, that's great. Now, I know there's the Celebration of Black Writers, and have you been involved in that at all? Is that a good place for someone to go who's interested in learning more
Absolutely.
About writing?
And actually, you know, that's how I got started. Like when I was writing into the doing the poetry, and I participated in the Celebration of Black Writing, and I met someone there who not only she became one of my dearest friends, but also who really put me on the map in terms of with my poetry. And her name was Angela Kinnamore. Her name is Angela Kinnamore, and at the time she was the poetry editor of Essence Magazine.
Mm.
And, you know, she was like, I had a conversation with her at a poetry reading, and she was like telling me about all sorts of like how today's, and this was back in 98, and she was like telling me that, you know, that all the poetry nowadays seems negative and you just want to hear some positive inspiration. I'm like, I wonder if she'll like my work. And sure enough, she did. And so she was like, wow. And you just formed a friendship over the years where, whereas like she used to call me at work saying, you know, Susan Taylor is giving me like X amount of pages for a spread for Poetry in Essence, Bill. What you got for me?
Mm-hmm. Do you have anything for us today? You have anything for us today that you could read?
Yes, I do. I mean, I can have like past, present. What are you in the mood to hear for? You know,
whatever you feel comfortable reading. You could just read one of your poems for the audience. I think they would appreciate that.
Okay. Well, make it shorter. Long. Actually, I want to do one of my newer pieces.
Okay.
And this is actually a true story, and it's actually one of my personal favorites, and it's called In the End. When I stare at my reflection in the mirror, I think of a quote that Muhammad Ali once said, "A man who views the world at 50, as he did at 20, has wasted 30 years of his life. Now, I haven't reached the half-century mark just yet, but I'm getting tired, sick and tired of the image that I see behind this deceitful, smiling face, harboring secrets and telling lies to disguise from myself and my loved ones that deep down inside, I am not a happy person. No, I'm not. And I'll no longer keep pretending to believe that the world is young and the universe is alive with infinite possibilities, because that's not my reality. Since misery sure loves company. And she didn't hesitate to shack up inside my soul along with anger, bitterness, envy, and every negative emotion or thought I feel, think, and imagine. And so I pray for a solution to this conflicting turmoil that trickles down into every aspect of my life. When adversity pushes me between a rock and a hard place, and I'm suddenly losing control of everything. But what good does it do for me to pray for a solution to my problems when I've lost my faith in God and my heart's no longer humble? And forget about writing out my frustrations, because my words have no merit or significance when I don't have the passion to creatively express myself. But the only solution in sight for me are those storm clouds on those sunny skies on those chaotic mornings when the weatherman told me it was going to be a beautiful day. And maybe, just maybe, I should finish what I contemplated 18 years ago and finally take that slide right off the razor's edge and just slash my wrist. Or better yet, go out number one with a bullet through my brain. Because I'm tired, sick and tired of this never-ending struggle to maintain my sanity in this insane world where I have reached my boiling point and I don't give a damn if I live anymore. Because in the end, is it all worth it? But somehow, I do find a reason to live when I least expect it. Like the newspaper headline that grabbed my attention about an 18-year-old high school senior committing suicide one Tuesday, December morning. A reality slapped me in the face because 18 years ago, that could have been me. Yeah, that could have been me. No, that should have been me. Yeah, that should have been me. But it wasn't. No, it wasn't. So why am I alive? I don't know. Maybe because someone reached out to me and told me that I'm not alone and I have so much to live for. And now I find myself standing at the crossroads coming full circle 18 years later to choose between life or death, the legacy I leave behind for myself and my loved ones. As an artist, I take great pride that every word I write is an extension of my breath, my heart, my soul, that I want the world to share and to remember long after my life has come to an end. But maybe these words that I write and speak have merit and significance to someone right now listening to the sound of my voice who feels the way that I do, lonely, uncertain about what tomorrow will bring and whether or not I'll live to witness another sunrise and sunset. Or maybe they're meant for myself to be still and to listen, to allow them to penetrate to the root of the matter as the healing process begins to restore my faith and love through forgiveness and humility. And the image that now appears before my eyes when I stare at my reflection in the mirror recognizes what I failed to see all along. God is inside of me. He always has been. He always will be, before and after the storm's arrival and its departure. And while tomorrow will take care of itself, it isn't promised to anyone, including me. So I can't afford to waste my time anymore, because I've got a lot of living left to do. And in the end, it is worth it, and then some. Thank you.
Wow. Wow, you had me going there. I was like, he's taking this deep, far to the edge inside your soul there. And I think that's what the power of art does. It can draw you in, suck you in, mesmerize, almost forgetting what's going on around you. And then, you know, the poem's over, or the art is over, or the music is over, and you're like back to reality. Very powerful, Bill, very powerful.
Thank
now,
you.
I think that for me, art has been cathartic also. I've done acting, and I've written some monologues myself. And definitely I will say that art has been a cathartic process in my life. And I think it's important that children have art in the classrooms, whether it's writing or visual arts, because they need some way to vent. Every kid is not a sports hero. Every kid doesn't play basketball or football or run track. So for the kids who are not into that, they need another avenue. And I went to a performing arts elementary school, Meredith Elementary School, which is at 5th and Fitzward in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And they really, I would say, that's where my love for art really thrived, because we had dance, music, we had writing, and it was taken very seriously. It wasn't like a side class or an elective. It was part of the entire curriculum. And now that school is well known all over the city, I mean, kids, parents are clamoring to get their kids in there because of the art program and how they balance that with the academics. The academic expectations are very high. So I'm glad that you mentioned about school, your parents. That's very important, that just because you're an artist doesn't mean that you don't need education.
No, you don't. And a lot of people think that, oh, you went to school for an English degree. No, I have a degree in accounting.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, I still have some, you know, unfinished business. This year I'm also studying and will be sitting for my CIA exam, Certified Internal Auditor exam.
So great.
Thank you. And it's just like that's a part of me. Like the accounting really helped me out, because a lot of people think that the writing is piece, once you go do that, that's over. But there's also a business side to this whole thing in terms of promoting your work, marketing, and in terms of doing accounting and bookkeeping, in terms of like putting together, like keeping track of your sales, and then also the income that you make and the expenditures that you put out for, let's say, flyers, websites, internet, promotions. And
you have
like
a website.
Think of that. Yes, I
you
do.
You have a website. Tell me your website, Bill.
My website is www.billholmes.com. And Holmes
okay.
is spelled H-O-L-M-E-S.
Check
and
it out. We have a caller here. I want to take this caller here.
Sure.
Let's see. Okay. Hello, caller. You're calling from 202 area code?
Yes. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Morning, Bill.
Good morning. What's your name?
My name's Leanne.
Good morning.
Hi,
good morning. Thank you.
How are you? Good morning.
Do you have any
good
questions
morning.
For Bill?
I just wanted to make a comment and then maybe get some feedback from Bill. It takes a lot of courage to be an artist, and I want to applaud you for exerting that kind of quality. But how do you encourage other artists, both through your example, but what is your feeling about, you know, fear and the function of fear and the courage to face up to your fears in terms of developing your work?
Oh, wow. Thank you for the comment, Leanne. And really, facing up to fear is just really doing it, because it's funny you should mention courage, because before I begin reciting poetry at events, I always give thanks to God and to all the poets who came before and after me, because it does take great strength and courage to do what we do up here, and just really putting everything into his hands, just really doing it, and just really, like, not being afraid to take risks, as Joy said, but also not being afraid to fail, because you learn from your mistakes, and you improve upon them. And I've definitely gone through some, like, you know, when I was started writing out in poetry, they didn't sound all like in the end. And it was just like some of them were a little corny, a little forgettable, but and just learning as you grow and building confidence, and the confidence, like, just getting out there and sharing your work. And as time goes on, you'll find out that you'll gain it to be able to do other things and just pursue. And you can take that experience and apply it to other aspects in your life, and which I've done. So, and I don't know if I've answered your question or not.
Oh, thank you so much. Congratulations to both of you.
Thank you very
thank
much,
you.
Leanne. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Leanne.
Bill, I just wanted to, if you mind, reading a little excerpt from your book, One Love.
Okay.
And it's Chris, the main character, is writing an email to the other main character, Regina, and he's sharing with her a poem he wrote after they met called Miracle. So I'm just going to read that a little bit. It says, "Hi, Regina. How are you doing? I hope all is well for you and that this email finds you in good spirits. It was nice to see you yesterday aboard the R3 train. I enjoyed our conversation. Your words were very encouraging and really made me feel better. As for myself, all is well, and I'm not going to complain. Today is a new day, and no matter what the future holds, I will do my best to stay focused on my goals. Well, Regina, I've got to get back to work. Take care of yourself, stay in touch, and keep writing. Chris. P.S. Last night I had a burst of creativity and was able to finish the poem I was writing the Monday morning we met. I hope you don't mind me sharing it with you. I would love to hear your feedback. Thank you so much." The poem is called Miracle. Luminous, laughing eyes, scintillating, smiling face, exuding exuberance, opening the gateway into innocence, revealing restless spirits, swirling and swirling and swirling and swirling, your life, my child, bursting with infinite possibilities. You are the pride and the reflection of your parents' love and the architect of your dreams, to dream big dreams that exceed the boundaries of your aspirations, because tomorrow, my child, belongs to you. You have a lot of poems that are inspirational for women. You really show your love for the black female in your poems, and the way you describe her, her beauty, her eyes, her hair, the way she walks, the way she talks. It's such a nice, it's very refreshing to see that, especially for a lot of black women. You talk about women of all shades, not just light women, dark women, tall women, short women, because for most, I mean, of my life, in terms of the media, in terms of a lot of books I read in school, there weren't a lot of positive examples of black women. And so it's refreshing to see you, especially as a black male, the respect and love that you have for the black female is very refreshing to me. Thank is that something you learned from your mentors or other writers?
It's interesting that you should mention that. Growing up, my mother and I, let's put it this way. We were like, I won't say that we didn't always get along, but we were so much alike. And you take a positive and a positive, and it repels each other. Mm. And we just like, you know, I had my rebellious moments and some things about that. And just really taking it back and looking and appreciating what this woman did for me and all the things that she sacrificed for her family and to get us where she was. And I credit, and I tell people this all the time, I get my creativity from her. But had she never decided to get married, she might have pursued that. She could have probably, I don't know. But she's like a funny storyteller. She has a comedic side. And there are other things about her. And just really going back to the nucleus, those three black women that had a major influence, my mom, my favorite aunt, who's my aunt Peach, and just like my aunt Peach, who more or less like had like was really the one who had the influence of me of Afrocentricity. I'm sorry, in terms of having black pride and mm-hmm. just like in who you are and just like just being the trailblazer that she was, and it was just like wow. And my mm-hmm. grandmother, the same person who was just like, you know, she followed what she did and she marched to the beat of her own drummer. And those three women just like, wow. And someone had complimented me, and people tell me this all the time, your voice, you just have this voice. And I'm like, I don't get it. Someone made a compliment to me, like at a poetry reading, like you appeal to women. And so I'm like, really? And like even when I recite some of the poems, like I've gotten into about women and everything like that, and I'm looking around at women as I'm going through, like, you know, ooh, wow, ooh, and I'm like, what are they ooh and on about? just really observing and just being like observing about or just hearing stories about from my friends about their experiences with men and just really and. Essence, you know, getting back to that, it's just, you know, it's a magazine for African American women.
Yeah.
It's really, it was something that, like, you know, it's like, wow, this is powerful and positive. How come brothers don't have this? You know?
maybe you'll start a magazine for black men and creativity. Anything's possible. I want to repeat your website again for the listeners. www.billholmes.com. Check it out. It talks about Bill and shares some of his work, his up-and-coming things. Also, you mentioned you're teaching a writing class. The Temple website address, again, is www.temple.edu/PASCEP. Is that correct,
yes,
though?
Correct.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And the telephone number was 215-204-1993.
Mm-hmm.
We also mentioned about the Celebration of Black Writers. I believe that's being hosted by Art Sanctuary.
Yes, the Art Sanctuary that does it. They do it every year.
And I think their website is www.artsanctuary.org. They're a nonprofit organization, so people could check that out for making connections in the writing community in the Philadelphia, Pennsylvania area. I wanted to thank you, Bill, for coming on today. I wanted to play one of your newer pieces that you share with me. I think it really shows your maturity from the earlier pieces, Big, Bold, and Beautiful, Little Black Boys. And when I played it, I mean, it's something you can just listen to over and over again while you're walking around your house, you're driving in your car on the drive or something like that. It was very, very mellow but intricate. So I would like to play that for our listeners. Again, callers, I want to thank you for calling in. For people who are listening on their computer, thank you for listening on your computer. There are also people who are chatting on the chat window with me. I tried to share their web addresses. Next week, we're going to be talking about domestic violence, which is a very serious issue, not only in the black community, but all over the world. So join in next week at 11 o'clock, Saturday mornings with Joy Keys. We're talking about domestic violence, and Women in Transition, which is a nonprofit organization in Philadelphia, will be here to talk about how to spot when you're in a relationship, how to get out, what resources are available. Bill, I want to play your piece, and I want to again thank you for coming today and sharing your poetry,
sure,
your art.
Yes, and this is this is actually on my new CD that's coming out this spring called Brand New Day, and the poem is called Unspoken, and it's a duet with a very good friend of mine, also another sister, a Brooklyn poet by the name of Tantra Zawati, and Unspoken.
Okay, hold on.
I'm not a poet.
He's not a poet.
I'm not a poet.
He's not a poet.
Just another face in the crowd, hanging out at that spoken word hotspot, digging that mellow, smooth, feel-good vibe, waiting patiently for the moment to experience her again, like that unforgettable night, the first time.
The first time.
I want to thank callers again. I'm just going to fade out with Bill's poem, Unspoken.
Whenever she shares her poetry, I can't put my finger on it, and it doesn't really matter, because there is something about her, this fine and lovely lady, who captures my undivided attention. She haunts my daydream. Feel good.
I need him.